Gary Marshall has been writing, producing, directing, and even acting for over 50 years. He created the hit television shows Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Mork and Mindy, and has directed 17 films, including The Flamingo Kid, Pretty Woman, Runaway Bride, Beaches, The Princess Diaries, and most recently Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. And now he's written a memoir with the help of his daughter, Laurie Marshall, called My Happy Days in Hollywood, which recounts his journey that began in the Bronx. It's published by Crown Archetype, and I'm very pleased to welcome Gary Marshall back to our show today. Hello.
How are you, Leonard? Nice to see you.
Now, anyone who has heard you talk would suspect that you never left the Bronx. Were you ever tempted to try to lose the accent?
I was sent to Northwestern University. My father said, you'll lose your accent. Didn't work out so good. I lost it for a minute, but I don't know. I never met a girl or could get a laugh without the accent for some reason. No, I was just lazy and... This is the way I talk. I can think the way this sounds.
It's those rhythms.
Rhythms of the Bronx.
And when you're in L.A., do people look at you strangely?
They make fun of me, yes.
Oh, good.
They do. But,
so what was your childhood in the Bronx like? Near the Grand Concourse?
Grand Concourse. It always karma amuses me. And my lucky number is 13th. I was born on November 13th. I lived at 32, 35 Grand Concourse, which adds up to 13. So, I had a good childhood growing up. And I was influenced a lot by my parents. And they were kind of in show business. My mother taught dancing in the cellar of our building, and my father made documentaries and radio stuff. I remember he took me to a radio show he did with Charles Laughton. I didn't know who Charles Laughton was particularly, but it was interesting.
Is that what led you to work at this radio station, WNYC?
My father helped me get a job here at WNYC in 1952. People say, that long ago? I thought he was younger, Gary. No.
you were just out of high school.
I was a senior in high school, yes. And it was, as I think back, it was exciting. It was a job. I was working, and I came down in the subway all the way down. It was downtown, really far.
It was in the municipal building across from City Hall.
City Hall, that's right. That's where I was. And I loved jazz, I loved Dixieland, not a fan of classical music, but from working at WNYC, I wrote the dialogue for the DJ on Sunrise Symphony. I always remember Sunrise
Symphony. I think that was the first classical music radio show in America. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm sure I'll get a lot of hate mail. But did that convince you to major in journalism at Northwestern?
That and the fact that I was sports editor of the DeWitt Clinton News in the Bronx. That was my high school. And produced a lot of writers, DeWitt Clinton. And to this day, Stan Lee, who created Batman and everything.
Spider-Man
and on Broadway. And we still hang out together. He's like 107, but he's old.
Yeah, he's been on the show a couple of times. Anyone else from the neighborhood that we should know about? Was this a neighborhood that encouraged kids to succeed?
You had a dressing well was very big, and in our neighborhood was Calvin Klein and Ralph Lifshitz. It was Lifshitz in those days. And then we had, playing ball was important, and being able to beat people up was important. And I didn't like it. I liked playing ball, but I wasn't so good. But the last resort was make people laugh, and then nobody would pick on you.
Well, you went to Northwestern, which is not exactly like going to City College.
No.
And then you went into the Army?
Somebody wrote in the Post he had a brief enlistment in Korea. Brief enlistment in Korea. I was there 2 years. What is that to write?
But your father suggested that you tell the Army you were a television cameraman, even though you weren't.
I know. He said, you don't want to get stationed someplace like Korea. Sure enough, I was sent to Korea to build the television station, and there was none. So we did radio. I did a lot of radio in Korea.
Despite your experience at WNYC,
still
went into radio.
I said, I wrote Sunrise Symphony. They said, so what? Well, what is that?
But you also made films, didn't you? And some of those films that are meant to scare soldiers?
Oh, I was also, because I had a New York accent, they made me an actor. And I did a lot of those films, acting in the, safe sex films, and the I was in one about the canine corps, the dogs that frightened me, and I was always the guy who didn't know. I couldn't read the map well, I couldn't read my compass well, so I did those, and
You're being typecast, something you probably thought about later.
Later.
When you were casting other people.
But I thought I was getting laughs. I was just the comedy relief.
You're just the idiot.
We did it in Long Island, where the studio is now. It was an army studio there.
But you did spend those years in Korea, and then you came back. And did you know what you wanted to do at that point? You worked for the Daily News, didn't you?
Yes, I knew I had to get a job. And I remember I was talking to somebody today. I lived in a five-floor walk-up down on 16th Street, and I was making $38 a week at the Daily News, which paid the rent, was only $150, and I had a roommate. We shared. So I worked for the Daily News almost 2 years also.
And then played drums professionally?
Well, yes. My daytime job was a nighttime job. I played drums. My mother had taught me to play the drums when she had her dancing school because there was no babysitter. I couldn't dance, so you'll play something. Drums seemed to be easiest. And I loved playing the drums. And then I did get to write the jokes for the comedians in the clubs where I played the drums. So that eventually worked out.
So that's what got you started writing comedy.
Yeah. I had a partner at Northwestern, Fred Freeman, who said, we can write comedy. You can make a living at this. My parents were not sure, but he said we could. So when I got out of, came back from Korea, we did try to write. We had a card made. It was 100% virgin material, it said on the card.
And going back to your venereal disease.
Yes, I everything has an influence on one.
So, but then you obviously hit the big time because you started writing for the Tonight Show, Jack Parr.
Yes, Phil Foster and Joey Bishop were my mentors, and Joey Bishop substituted for Jack Parr on the Tonight Show, hired me, and
they never lost their Brooklyn accent. So I guess
Yeah, Phil Foster. When you work for Phil Foster,
he named himself after Foster Avenue in Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's right, or the Concourse.
You could have been Gary Concourse.
Yeah. Phil Foster and Sheldon Leonard, two men with worse accents than me, I worked for, so I didn't think I'd improve.
But you also met some other people, Dick Cavett, Woody Allen there?
Yes, so Dick Cavett was the talent coordinator. I was the four writers, and I was one of them. And then the John Carsey was the associate producer, whose wife, Marcy Carsey, later ran ABC Comedy Development. So it's odd how you meet people and they connect later in the circles of life.
With a name like Marcy Carsey, you got to get involved.
Yes,
in comedy.
A rhyming name is always good luck, too.
You say that Woody Allen told you a story that stuck with you.
Well, Woody Allen was Dick Cavett's idol, and he kept trying to get Woody on the Tonight Show, and Jack Parr didn't quite understand that type of humor. But we loved Woody, and then we would all write topical jokes. And because they were not topical after a day, we would all do them in the clubs in the Village, and we all worked at the Duplex. And I remember Woody Allen got a job with the Gary Moore Show, who spelt it with two R's, too, an odd thing. And he quit. Because he didn't exactly quit. Gary Moore made all the people who worked on his show go to a brunch every Sunday. And Woody didn't like brunches. He was a little shy, so he didn't go to the brunch. And Gary fired him. And it was like, I think, $1,500 a week. I was startled about it. You just get, well, I can't go to brunch, said Woody. But Later, a lot of times things would come up. Do I do this? Do I do that? And I would think of Woody. Well, do you stand there? Do you, with a wife and three kids, a lot of
you
times I went to the damn brunch. I tell you the truth.
Whether you wanted to or not.
At first, I didn't.
And then you also met your writing partner, Jerry Belson.
Jerry Belson, after Fred Freeman had come to Hollywood with me, Fred, also a Northwestern kid, went back to New York, and I worked with Jerry Belson, and who's brother I met in Korea. See, everything kind of is circles.
But the move seems to be very quick ascent. I mean, you go to L.A. and you write for the Lucy Show.
Yeah, because
she was a superstar at that point.
Oh, she was big. But it was after Desi, so it was
That was the second show.
Second show wasn't quite as good as with Desi, but we wrote for her for 3 years and. Milt Josephburg, who produced the Joey Bishop Show in Hollywood. I went out there to write to Joey Bishop and Danny Thomas and that. And Danny was a great influence. So we did get lucky in meeting a lot of funny people who hired us.
My guest is Gary Marshall, spelt with two R's in the Gary, one in the Marshall. He's written with the help of his daughter, Laurie Marshall, a memoir called My Happy Days in Hollywood. So when did you start getting into producing?
Well, everybody said you can't just be a writer for somebody. You got to I always had ambitious partners. That's the thing. Fred Freeman wanted to go to Hollywood. I would have stayed in New York. I like New York. But then we went to Hollywood, and Jerry Belson said, we got to do our own show. And when we created a show called Hey Landlord, not a hit, a big flop, but they made me producers because we created it. And the first thing I did as a producer was hire myself as a director because nobody else would do such a thing. I had no credits. But I got into the director.
So you learned how to direct.
Yes, I learned on the job. John Rich, a wonderful director, recently passed away, was my mentor then.
But usually if you have a flop like, Hey, Landlord, they don't give you another chance. You wound up doing some pretty big things. The Odd Couple, I guess, was your first...
First hit of my own, in a sense. Neil Simon created the characters, and
you were adapting the Broadway show.
Yeah, we did the movie. The movie and the show was done. We had to do TV. They said it won't work out. It did.
And you had brilliant casting on the TV version.
That's what people say. Think back. Well, my daughter who wrote the book said, think back. What were you? You know, it used to be, what do you do? Then they ask you, how did you do it? Now all they ask you is, how did you feel?
I'm not going to ask you that.
Don't ask me how I feel.
No, but
But I remember casting became the key. I saw if you got a real good, funny person or a good actor, your material rose, got better. And if you wanted them to say exactly how you wrote it, you should go do a play. Because each person speaks differently and things come out of their mouth. So I adjusted to their style of each comedian and each actor.
And you wound up with Jack Klugman and Tony Randall.
Yes.
And we still think of them in those roles.
Yes.
And then you also cast your sister Penny in the show.
Yes.
Giving her start.
Yeah, that was her first real good job.
And you brought in your parents as well. You were the ultimate in nepotism.
I said, what the heck? Let's work with people you know in case it gets tiring. I was sickly, so I needed an aspirin or I had a headache. It's nice to have a relative who could hand you something.
My guest is Gary Marshall. He's written a book called My Happy Days in Hollywood with the help of his daughter, Laurie Marshall. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The Odd Couple, obviously, was Neil Simon's, but then you created Happy Days all on your own?
Yeah, I got to where I was creating off Odd Couple and trying different shows. And it was all about reruns. And they kept saying, I had three kids by that time, and a wife and a whole family, and supporting many of my own family. So I was told that the reruns were the key. And I said,
still is.
They still are. They don't. But they look old, so I figured if we started old, then Michael Eisner, Tom Miller, and myself all came up with a show. Only the Waltons was nostalgia at that time, and we came up with a Happy Days set in the 50s. And
it ran for 11 seasons.
Yes, and we didn't have to do drugs and sex, which were part of the 70s.
Now, Henry Winkler as Fonzie was one of the most popular characters on that show. Didn't the network want you to rename the show Fonzie?
Yes. Well, he was quite big there. He started out saying "Whoa" and "Hey," which was quite easy to write, I must say. But then they said, couldn't you write a few more lines? And he emerged and evolved into the big star. And he also has books. Henry's writing books now.
And Ron Howard hasn't done so badly.
No, he wanted to direct. He wanted to direct. So,
did he wait until he started looking old? Because he was young for... almost as long as Dick Clark was.
Yes,
young.
Well, he was Opie, and that's where I first met him, on Andy Griffith. I would throw the ball with him. Nobody wanted to play ball with him. I threw the ball. But he, only recently he put his hat on because he was losing his hair, but he didn't want to direct Happy Days. He wanted to go and do movies.
And your partner, your writing partner, split with you during that.
Well,
he didn't think Happy Days was going to be a hit?
No, he said, what did you do? I said, I created a show. He said, well, it's fun. I don't know if it's fun. I am going with Steven Spielberg and do movies. And he left. He did a lot of stuff with Steven, and I did Happy Days.
And then you did Laverne and Shirley with your sister.
Well, you know, we like to keep Penny working, my mother said. But she was very talented, and other people. I remember saying to Jack Klugman, who had worked with Penny on another show, I said, and he said, what about your sister for being a secretary? I said, you think we can convince Tony? Tony didn't like new people, and he really didn't like relatives. So Jack said, I think we can convince Tony, and Jack and I did.
And then you started making movies, and you got some good advice from Francis Ford Coppola?
Yeah, well, I did TV a long time, and then it was too many shows and too hectic, and my first directing job was a movie called Young Doctors in Love, in which I was frightened, but my sister knows everybody. Penny, by then, was a big star from Laverne and Shirley, and excuse me, I'm choking on radio. She sent Francis Coppola my first day of shooting to give me encouragement, and he was like, wow. And he took me for a walk. He said, come, let's talk. I said, oh, now I'm going to learn about directing. Here I go from the master. And he told me to change my shoes a lot. So I said, okay, that's a thing. Thank you, Francis. And we're friends to this
day. That's better than telling you how to point the camera.
Yeah, no, I wanted to hear a great shot, but he told me to change my shoes at lunch, and I did.
Well, you do seem to like most of the people you worked with, Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell, Julia Roberts, you write about quite fondly. Did you know that she would be such a huge star after you put her in Pretty Woman?
Oh, yes, we did sense it. I mean, a lot of people write tell-all books. I write tell-nothing, just the amuse you books. No, because I love the people I work with. Julia, we didn't know her, and nobody knew her particularly. She did some films, but she cried in Steel Magnolias and The Mystic Pizza. She didn't do much, but finally Pretty Woman, we saw how she just lit up that screen, and Richard and I both noticed, and she went on. And,
well,
and
you had so her Runaway Bride as well.
Yes, Julia made a pact. She says, we're going to work every 10 years. So we did Pretty Woman 10 years later, Runaway Bride, and 10 years later, Valentine's Day. And she kept to her word.
Now, what makes a good set and a good experience making a movie?
For me, it's the process, because whether it's a hit or not is very iffy. Critics... I've not always been kind. I think children of critics who used to rap me are now rapping me. So it's a whole process. But I don't know if it's a hit or a miss, but I know the process can be pleasant. So I always try to make the filming of it pleasant, and I keep an open set and kind of have fun.
Well, one last question. You've had some monster hits. We didn't even mention Mork and Mindy. We didn't mention The Flamingo Kid, Princess Diaries.
Yeah, Princess Diaries was my best experience, I think.
But then how do you make the movies that that people consider bombs? I don't know whether you think they're bombs or not. isn't there some sense, once you have that Midas touch, on how to maintain it?
No, people who say they know it, understand it, or they know what they're doing, they always fail. It's really every time it's what happens. The reason I'm still in it, I'm one of the oldest people who came here, I bet, is that there's still a magic. There's still a magic when you see suddenly an Anne Hathaway do something and you say, well, that's more interesting and that will get people's attention quicker than this joke or this story or this explosion. And that's what I like to see. And I do magic in a love story rather than in sometimes a tense picture. But you try to do what you do and you read about all the great authors or something that the Chekhov was not always a hit. Camus was not always a hit. It just always interested me that Samuel Beckett and I both did pieces called Happy Days. And one of the highlights is they had a production of Samuel Beckett's Happy Days in Brooklyn, and they played my theme song as the audience walked in. Suddenly we're a team. But I think you all go through it. Not that I'm an artist like them, but any creative field, there's ups and downs.
So are you going to – is your next project something called Crap's Last Tape?
Well, maybe. I was going to do something different than a holiday. As we sit here and speak, and I love doing the book, but there's a script of Mother's Day on my desk. I didn't read it yet. I don't want to do another holiday. So I don't know what the next will be. I hope I get back on television. I did create a show about my family in the Bronx that I hope will star my sister Penny playing my grandmother, and we'll see what happens.
Gary Marshall's written a memoir called My Happy Days in Hollywood. It is published by Crown in the Archetype imprint, and I thank you so much for being with us again.
Always good to see you. I see you say Len, love. You don't say Leonard. You used to be Leonard.
Do I call you Gar?
Well, Gar, you can say if you're from my neighborhood. They all call me Gar.